So today we are looking at Dhammapada verses 316 and 317, which read as follows. Alajjitaye lajjanti, lajjitaye nalajjare, micchaditi samadana, satta gacchanti dugating. Abhaye bhayadasino, bhaye cha bhayadasino, micchaditi samadana, satta gacchanti dugating. Which means, they are unashamed, or they are ashamed by what is not shameful. And for what is shameful, they are unashamed. Taking up wrong view, beings go to a bad destination. They see danger in what is not dangerous, and in what is dangerous, they don't see danger. Taking up wrong view, beings go to a bad destination. These verses were taught in connection with a group of naked ascetics. So in the time of the Buddha, even today in some places, there are ascetics who have picked up the view that nudity is the most perfect practice for the cultivation of liberation, of freedom from attachment to ego. To go naked is the ultimate sacrifice, or something like that. They have the view that it's right practice, and it's a high practice to go naked. So in the time of the Buddha, this was a growing religious tradition under a famous teacher in Indian history, Mahavira, or Jaina, leader of what is now known as the Jains. And it happened that one day a group of Buddhist monks, well clad in their lower robes and upper robes, came in contact with a group of naked ascetics. But there was something curious about these naked ascetics, because they had alms bowls as well, I guess. And on their alms bowls, they had a piece of cloth that hung down, and it hung down over their private part, covering over the top of the bowl and down over their front. And the monks started, one of the monks remarked, sort of in praise of these ascetics, saying, "Oh, well, normally we see these ascetics going completely naked, but I guess these ascetics have some sense of shame. At least the front part of their body is covered." And the naked ascetics heard this, and one of them said, "No, that's not why we have that's not what that cloth is for. The cloth isn't to cover up our nudity. That the nudity is our practice. That cloth is to cover the bowl." It just had this big cloth that was only meant to be big enough to cover the bowl because dust and particles of dirt that might fall into the bowl would be a real danger to our spiritual life. And they explained that dust, according to their belief, dust has life. Dust has sentience, I guess. It has jivitindriya. And so if dust, it would be a terrible thing if dust were to fall into our bowl, because then we might eat the dust. And if we ate the dust, that would be killing living beings. So we cover our bowl to make sure that dust doesn't fall into our bowl. That's what that cloth is for. So quite surprised by this explanation, something the monks had never heard before, were concerned, or curious at least, wondering what the truth of this was. And so out of curiosity, they came to the Buddha and told him the story and asked him about this. And the Buddha said, these guys don't have any clue what is shameful and not shameful, what is dangerous and what is not dangerous. Beings with wrong view in this way are sure to go to, sure to have a bad future, a bad destiny. And then he taught these verses. So the story is an interesting example of the complexity of ethics. Buddhist ethics isn't that difficult to understand, but it's not precisely simple either. The simplest explanation of ethics is that there are only three things that are unethical. Greed is unethical, anger is unethical, and delusion is unethical. That's it. Nothing else is technically unethical. But here you have a curious set of beliefs. A curious pair of questions. The question regarding the taking of life and the question regarding the exposure of the nude body. And on the surface, it seems like obviously taking life is far worse than exposing your nudity to other people. It seems like nudity should be something completely innocuous. Whereas taking life is, by most people's standards, an unethical act. But here we have the ridiculous idea that not only does dust have sentience or have life, but also that it would then be possible to prevent yourself from inhaling any dust. You'd have to wear a mask over your mouth, which I think some of them do. And the idea behind their ethics in this tradition is that the actual acts have some ethical weight to them. Killing a living being, whether it's intentional or unintentional, has unethical consequences, has negative consequences, is bad karma. Of course, this is not the belief of Buddhism. Buddhism technically says that the killing, the act of killing is not unethical. It's the intentional killing that is inevitably caught up with both anger and delusion, steeped heavily in it. So the intentional act of killing is always going to be unethical because of its inevitable connection, unavoidable connection with unethical mind states. That's it. If one were walking down the street and stepped on an ant or an insect, not even knowing that the insect was there, there would be no ethical consequences. Now, if one walked blindly, then there'd be the ethical consequences of not watching where you're going. So it's reasonable to assume that one should be careful to a reasonable extent, not to impose upon other living beings, not to bump into other human beings on the street, obviously. And it would be unethical to be careless, simply because carelessness is related to delusion. Carelessness has its root in lack of mindfulness. A mindful person is careful in everything they do, because their mind is clear. When your mind is not clear, there are always going to be consequences. But that doesn't mean that you have to sweep the path in front of you. We're not actually trying to avoid killing living beings. We're trying to avoid having impure intentions. So if you are mindful and without noticing, a living being dies as a consequence of your actions, there's obviously no ethical consequences therein. Because there is no basis in reality for an act itself to have ethical consequences. So it's an interesting lesson to talk about things like accidental killing of living beings. One that often comes up is the eating of animal flesh, which often confuses non-Buddhists when they hear about how Buddhists are okay with eating meat. And again, it's complicated, because it's not to say that there's no danger surrounding meat, but there's nothing unethical about the actual eating of dead animal flesh. Obviously, it has nothing to do with greed or anger or delusion, not intrinsically, not unless you're greedy for the taste or something like that. There's certainly no ill will towards the being that used to be alive and inhabit that flesh. So things like that. It's an interesting case to investigate, to help explain the true nature of ethics from a Buddhist perspective. And on the other side, we have this curious case of the Buddha's prohibition against monks going naked, and in fact dressing quite conservatively. We bare one shoulder, which in some places is not considered very conservative, but other than that, most of our body is always meant to be covered when in a public space. And someone might ask why that is of a concern. Why is there some belief as to the ethical implications? Now, most reasonable people appreciate the need to wear clothes, not just for the utility. The Buddha said there are two reasons for wearing clothes. One is the sheer utility of it. It protects you against the elements, it protects you against insects, it protects the sensitive parts of your body. But of course, the other side is the reason why most people do wear at least some clothes when they're outside of their showers or their washroom. It's because human beings are intrinsically sensual creatures. The human body is designed or has been built by rebirth after rebirth and through the process of natural selection to incline towards sensual pleasure and sensual indulgence. And so considering that is one of that sensual indulgence, the greed, the lust, the desire for pleasure, is considered to be one of the unethical realities in Buddhism. It doesn't really require much explanation to point out that while nudity is not an unethical thing, there are so many ethical implications surrounding nudity that it doesn't require much argument to say that one should cover up one's private areas, because of the potential, of course, for attraction and for distraction and for the arising of sensual desire if one were to expose oneself to other people. Obviously, being naked in your washroom or Even when monks go into the sauna, they're allowed to be naked with other monks and that sort of thing. There's nothing unreasonable about that. But it gives us a glimpse into some of the intricacies of ethics. That ultimately is a simple affair. It's about purifying our minds of greed, anger, and delusion. Those are the only negative, evil things in existence. Actions themselves don't have that power. And then to extrapolate that and have a sensitivity to appreciate what occasions of action and speech are likely to trigger, or often are inevitably going to trigger, greed, anger, and delusion. And we understand morality in this way. This, of course, has strong implications for meditators as we directly come to confront these states of mind, confronting greed, confronting anger, confronting delusion, as we actually see it arise and cause us problems. A meditator doesn't need to contemplate ethics. Ethics is not something that you should have to rationalize or reason out. I mean, you shouldn't even have to talk about it the way I'm talking about it. The reason for explaining is to help, not to help you intellectualize it, but to help you resonate with it in your practice, and to notice in your practice how true this is, that ultimately it's not the actions themselves, it's what's behind them. And to notice how greed causes stress and suffering, anger causes stress and suffering, delusion causes stress and suffering. This is the important thing about ethics. The important is to see it for ourselves and to have it be a part of our discovery and our path to find wisdom and freedom. So the teachings in the verses have two parts, relating again to morality and relating to view, the view of what is right and what is wrong, and right view about the truth of life. So the first part is twofold. The Buddha, in the first verse, he uses the word shame, that which is shameful, that which is not shameful. In the second verse, he says the same thing, but instead of shame, he uses danger, the word danger, what is dangerous and what is not dangerous. And they have the same basic meaning. Shame is the quality of mind that causes one to recoil and balk at the idea of performing certain actions. And danger is just the knowledge that it has dangerous consequences. So you could say that shame is the aversion to the act itself, and the sense of danger or fear, you could say, the sense of the fearsomeness of it is in regards to the consequences. But either way, it amounts to the same thing, and in practice it is the same thing. It's just two ways of describing different facets of how a person sees a deed as either ethical or unethical. And so the Buddha says he points out that there are people in the world, these naked ascetics in particular, who get it all wrong, who see what is shameful as not shameful, and what is not shameful as shameful, who see what is dangerous as not dangerous, and what is not dangerous as dangerous. But you don't have to be a naked ascetic to get it all wrong. Without clarity and direct investigation of reality, of experience, everything is all just conjecture. So there are philosophers writing books and books about the nature of ethics and morality. Some of them get it kind of right, many of them get it wrong. Many of them simply intellectualize and will often try to calculate. So there are dilemmas about which is more unethical and which is less unethical. There are different ideas of what actually makes something ethical, but in the end they're all just ideas. And because they are ideas, of course they can be wrong. Statistically, they're just as likely to be wrong as right. And the reason why they get wrong, why they go wrong, has much to do with the presence of actually unethical states. So a person with greed, with anger, with delusion, is far more likely to come up with a wrong view than a person with little greed, little anger, and little delusion, even though they might not see clearly for themselves. The person with great, intense greed, anger, and delusion is far more likely to get it wrong. So by not recognizing what is actually the truth of ethics, it exacerbates our wrong views about what we think is ethical. And so this is the sort of thing you see in the world. You see people who will believe that it is shameful to give charity. Someone who is too generous, who is too nice, they will ridicule them. Some people will worry about giving, you know, they'll feel ashamed of the amount that they give. You know, some people will belittle others for being generous, but only on a small scale. So for example, this is a Buddhist problem, that some Buddhists will be scared to give alms, for example, because they only have coarse food, or they only have rough food, or they don't have something that they think anyone would like. This sort of misunderstanding is missing the point of good deeds. So being ashamed of doing something good, one should never be afraid of doing even the slightest bit of good. Some people are ashamed of ethics. People will shame others when they don't drink alcohol, for example. This is a very common one where there's peer pressure to drink alcohol. You can be shamed into killing. You know, people who are squeamish about violence, squeamish about the killing of insects, the killing of rodents, the killing of animals, will often be ridiculed by others. There's views in the world that hunting and fishing is an important part of social of society, an important part of proper behavior in the world, and so people will ridicule those who say that who are against hunting, or who recoil at the thought of killing. And also with meditation, there are people who find it shameful to sit quietly with your eyes closed, doing nothing of any value to the world. They will ridicule those who engage in navel gazing, who are selfish. They consider to be selfish in their quest for self-realization. All very, very wrong views, but the sort of thing that you see in the world. The same goes with danger. People will see danger in things that are not dangerous. They'll see danger in giving gifts, thinking, if I'm too nice to others, too kind, too generous, it'll be a danger to me. Not realizing the grave danger into the world when people are not generous, when people are selfish and stingy. How we see so much in the world, rich people hoarding their wealth, afraid for whatever reason, thinking it's dangerous to be generous for whatever reason, thinking they'll lose their power and influence if they're too generous. And look at how the world burns, and how people live in great poverty and anguish because of this greed, because of this hoarding of wealth. People see the danger in ethics, that if you're too ethical, you can't get ahead in the world, you won't be able to survive. If you don't lie, if you don't manipulate others, if you don't kill, it could be a danger to your life. Having to kill. Sometimes people will kill rodents, being afraid for their own health, you know, killing birds, slaughtering birds. The way we kill lab rats and lab animals because of our fear for certain diseases, thinking we have to sacrifice these animals for the betterment of society and so on, betterment of humans. And people see the danger in meditation. They think meditation is evil. Well, there are religious people of other traditions who believe that meditation is brainwashing, or people who believe that it's dangerous to practice mindfulness. We see the danger in things. They see the danger in things that are not dangerous, and they don't see the danger in things that are dangerous, not realizing the danger of greed, anger, and delusion. There's such a problem in the world. We rejoice, the worldly beings rejoice in greed, rejoice in their desire, rejoice in their pursuit of sensual pleasure. They often rejoice in their anger, feeling righteous anger, righteous indignation, anger at the injustices in the world. And delusion, we're proud of our pride, proud of ourselves, cling to our pride, cling to our ego. We even cling to worry, cling to doubt, cling to fear. We cling to these things, not seeing the danger in things that are truly dangerous, not seeing the shame in things that are truly shameful. And the only things that are truly shameful, truly dangerous, are again these greed, anger, and delusion. The second part of the verses points out that what this amounts to is wrong view, and says that it is wrong view above all other things that leads one to a bad destination. One can perform evil deeds and give rise to unethical states without wrong view, but the intensity of the evil is never going to be on the level. So for example, if a person kills another living being, it can happen that someone kills knowing that it's a bad thing to do, but feeling like they don't have another choice, or simply in a fit of rage. Or a more common experience is a person will feel a mosquito on their arm and feel threatened, kill the mosquito. And afterwards realize, oh, that was not a good thing to do. I killed that poor mosquito. That was kind of a mean and nasty thing to do. So it means they don't have the wrong view. You can perform evil deeds without wrong view. But a person who has the view that it is right to kill, right to steal, right to lie and cheat and take drugs and alcohol, we have the wrong view that it's wrong to be generous, it's wrong to be kind, it's useless, it's ridiculous, that meditation is useless, is unbeneficial, or even worse, that meditation is harmful. Who have the view that greed is good, anger is good, delusion is good. I mean, this multiplies. It puts on a whole other level, a whole other order of magnitude, the amount of greed, anger, and delusion that we're going to potentially give rise to. Belief that these things are good, belief that there's no danger in these, in greed and anger and delusion, no danger in killing, no danger in stealing, and so on. This belief is what distorts everything about how one perceives the world, how one approaches the world, how one approaches one's interactions with others. Again, the wrong view is often informed by one's greed, anger, and delusion. Since greed and anger, since the defilements of the mind pollute the mind and cloud the mind and prevent you from being able to see clearly. And so it's a cycle of sorts. Our greed, anger, delusion, they solidify into views. Yes, this is right. Yes, I should get angry here. I should be greedy here. This pride and conceit and worry and doubt, these are proper. Which in turn gives rise to more of them, obviously. When you believe that they are good, when you believe that there is no danger, you don't see the danger. This is the true catalyst for the increase and the growth of unwholesomeness. So our lesson as meditators here is always, always, always going to be to focus on wrong view. Our purpose in meditation is not to attack directly greed, anger, even delusion like greed, like doubt and worry and so on. We have to confront these and we have to face them. But our goal, our prime target, our primary target is going to be wrong view. It's the first thing that has to go. Until you have cut down the tree of wrong view, until you have eradicated this, you can't hope to possibly confront the rest, the actual defilements, in the way that is going to free you from suffering. Because it's wrong view that protects them, wrong view that grows them, that increases them. Our lesson as meditators is to not be concerned ourselves with what arises, not even concern ourselves with what causes what to arise. We're only to concern ourselves with the nature of what arises, trying to see whatever it is that arises, be it ethical or unethical, to see it as it is. Because again, ethics is something you can see for yourself. You can experience and discern directly for yourself that which is ethical and that which is unethical. And you can see the difference. Our practice of mindfulness, of straightening the mind in regards to experiences, reminding ourselves that seeing is seeing, hearing is hearing, pain is pain, sitting is sitting, and so on. It provides us with the clarity simply to see every single experience as it is, no more, no less. To not ignore experiences, but also to not make more of them than they actually are. And by doing this, repeatedly applying our minds to cultivate mindfulness, quite simply lets us see the nature of reality, the nature of what is. Because ethics, that which is ethical, that which is dangerous, that which is not dangerous, that which is shameful, that which is not shameful, all of these are well and truly embedded in reality. They aren't conceptual. They aren't ideas. If something is good, well, it has to be good in reality, right? Otherwise, in what sense is it good? Something is bad, likewise. It's not bad just because you say it bad. If it doesn't have any actual real bad consequences, no. It doesn't have a quality of badness to it. In what way can you say that it's bad? So reality, our focus is always on reality. And not just on trying to mold reality to be the way we want, to say, I will just not get angry, I will just not be greedy. This isn't our focus. Our focus is to actually learn for ourselves, to dispel the doubt, is this good, is this bad? By seeing for ourselves what is good, what is bad. This is the practice of mindfulness. This is the greatness of mindfulness, that it truly gives you right view. Right view is not some other view apart from all the wrong views. Right view is when you dispel all views in favor of actually viewing the truth, the way it actually is. Not the way the Buddha said it is, or the way I said it, say it is. But by looking objectively, without any bias, Buddhist bias or personal bias, and being able to see and confidently, 100%, without any doubt, say for yourself what is good and what is bad. It's when we don't do this, it's because we don't do this that we fall into wrong views, we get confused, we get mixed up, we allow our greed, our anger, and our delusion to dictate our views. And we enter into this cycle of the increase of defilement and propel ourselves to the lower realms, being reborn as animals, ghosts, even being reborn in hell. Our focus, therefore, always, always, always is on mindfulness, the present moment, and the investigation of the nature, the simple and obvious nature of reality that's right there in front of us, waiting to be investigated, waiting to be understood. So that's the Dhamma for today. Thank you for listening.